because it's right in front of you. The solution is right there. You just didn't see it. But the reason you didn't see it is because of this thing called functional fixedness, which means that you see a tool only through the use of how it's been introduced to you. So you can only see a pair of pliers as a gripping tool, not as a weight. I think the same thing applies with artificial intelligence. And we've spoken about this in the pod before, that if you introduce people to artificial intelligence through the lens of here are the ChatGPT prompts to go and use, what you end up with is people who think this is what AI is, and they can't use their imagination to think about it differently. So if you tell people, here's the tool, what you expect off the back of that is going to be compliance. The better way to think about it is that you introduce artificial intelligence through the lens of problems. So what problems do we find that are for customers, for us internally, and for you personally? And how do you use AI to solve those problems? And then when you start with problems first, what you end up with is discovery. So it's tool compliance versus problem discovery.
It's just the story you telling about you. And you realize that many of the stories we tell about ourselves comes from a wounded archetype. And then we hang around people with the same wounding. And so one of my very good friends right now, a German guy, we have the same wounding in our lover archetype. And we're so close that the trick for our lives is identifying the archetypes and identifying the wounds, and then realizing that our whole perspective of life, from money to relationships to success, is based on that wound. So that we can, because you know, business is a reflection of your wound. Making money is a reflection of your wound. Your relationship status is and when I think about myself, I'm so successful, but in my relationships, I'm nowhere. And then so obviously the wound sits in my lover archetype. And so I have to work on that wound, you know? Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's expansive podcast. So great to have you all with us. My name is John Sonne. I am one half of the pod. My co-host is Eric Kruger, who has been eating on behalf of his wife, who's pregnant. So don't look at YouTube right now and his face swollen up. But Eric, what's up, brother? What's up, Tubby, my friend Tubby? How are you doing?
I had the camera very strategically positioned. And so
you look
thinner.
Now
you're saying it's in my face. Yesterday
when we were talking, I think the camera was actually badly positioned because you did look tubby. And I remember, years ago, my kitchen manager, Jackie, his wife was pregnant and he was exhausted. And I said, what the hell's wrong with you? And he said, this is what happens. Like, I sometimes get exhausted when my wife is pregnant. I was like, what? And then I started reading about it. It is a thing. It's like, it's almost like as a unit, you become pregnant in a way because energetically. And then I asked you if your wife had put on weight. And before you answered, I realized you'd put on the weight between you and your wife. Your wife was actually still fine. I'm kidding. What's up, Eric? How are you, buddy?
Yeah, good, dude. Busy week, busy prepping for a huge roadshow that's coming up starting next week.
Yes.
It's amazing, hey? Like, I was just reflecting this morning on the fact that we get on stage and we present for 45 minutes, an hour, and you don't realize the hours and hours and hours of prep and research and design and back and forth that goes into that 45-minute slot that you see on stage. It's been so much back and forth. And it's been really cool to have, like, I don't really use AI for the writing of the talk, but I've been using it a lot for the fine-tuning of it. And it's so cool to have that sort of like brainstorming partner with you on hand. You know, it's added a new dimension, a new layer to presentations for me.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've been using it for the same things, like fine-tuning every slide. It's like this language doesn't feel right. I'm trying to get this across. What sort of heading do you think I should have here? I mean, yeah, you're so right. It's also really helped me. Yeah, it's helped me bring the message across quicker and more succinctly. Yeah, I agree with you.
What I did yesterday is I did a full dry run and I had... Do you use Whisperflow?
No, but I know it.
Dude, yeah, it's a game changer. It's probably the app I use the most.
Yes.
So Whisperflow is a dictation app for those that don't know, and it allows you to speak to any of the apps that you have. So typically when I'm working with Claude or ChatGPT, I'll use Whisperflow because you can just talk to it for a long time and then just dump everything in one go. So yesterday when I was rehearsing, I had Whisper Flow running in the background, recorded my entire 45-minute session, dumped that entire transcript, and I could then put that into ChatGPT and ask it to like look at certain things for me. So useful. Like again, like, so like I never sit down and write down on Word my entire talk. So I never have it word for word. And so to have it word for word and then to have it bullet pointed and to say like, okay, here's something to tweak to make the segue a bit better. Like, oh, it's so, like, it's so good.
I watched a great little 5-minute documentary last night from a DJ called James Hype. I don't know if you know him. Very famous. He's online a lot. He was it was such a good video. He was talking about headlining in Ibiza and how much work it's taken to be a headline in Ibiza. How many years he went there in 2017 and like schmuckled his way into a club to do a gig for free. And then like 3 years later, after doing it, eventually got his first paid gig. And then eventually, eventually he got onto this one stage. And then what's his name? The most famous DJ in the world, the blonde guy, the French guy. He was, what's his name?
Avicii, the guy who passed away.
No, Avicii died. No. Oh. He plays all the like, he brings in like not Beyonce. Greta was playing the Friday night stage. He was playing the Monday stage and Greta was sick. And so he was there. So they said, okay, you come in. And that's when it hit. And he's like, and the whole point of the documentary, which I thought was so brilliant, he's like, if you ever hear of anybody playing a headline act in Ibiza, and that's kind of the pinnacle of a DJ, right? If you get residency in Ibiza every year, that's the pinnacle. And he says, if you know anybody that's headlining in Ibiza, realize the amount of work it's taken, the years of marketing and this and PR and this and this. And I was like listening to him. I was like, dude, this is exactly what we do. It's like so much work goes into the back end to deliver that 45 minutes that's succinct, clear, and gets a great audience reaction and gets a rebooking. That is years of work, years and years of work, you know? It really shows you the amount of effort that's required to be good at almost anything you want to be, you know? Mm. So, yeah, that's great.
That's just counting craft. That's not counting all the like internal work that you do to be more confident, to like all that kind of stuff that even comes with it.
Right, right. You
also going on a busy tour now coming up?
Yes. I've got a very busy period now coming up. I've had a nice little holiday, actually. It just happened I guess it didn't happen by mistake. Europe, America, and Middle East is on holiday now. It's the December here, right? So July, August is the December in this part of the world. So we are squarely in the December period. So I haven't really worked. And next week I begin. Yeah, next week it's like Nashville, Hawaii, San Diego, Riyadh, Croatia, Johannesburg, Toronto, Mexico, and then about 6 cities in America. I'm flat out. And then end of October, Johannesburg, Cape Town, a bit of a tour as well in South Africa. And we've just signed a global tour for SAP. And so there's 10 cities.
Amazing.
So 10 cities. I'm starting with the first two ones in America. And I've just signed a huge deal with EY, with all their partners, like 5,000 partners, doing an online call with EY partners. And it's such an amazing thing. You know, I was laughing to myself. I'm presenting to EY partners. EY partners are like the pinnacle of corporate world. And I'm sitting here presenting to them. And I thought, what a funny thing. Because these people have got MBAs. They're highly astute. Mm. They've been working for years. And so, interesting to be doing a 5,000 partner call about AI.
Well, I think what's also interesting is that the world of expertise is changing a lot. And it's something that I'm like, you know, I don't know where I fall yet. I don't know what to, like, how to think it through just yet. Because on the one hand, expertise is now commoditized. ChatGPT is going to give you a much better answer to almost anything that you have an answer or a question for. On the other hand, there's the perspective, judgment, and taste that that we bring to a conversation. But at the end of the day, like where's expertise going? Like, what do they need? Why do they need a John Sarnay specifically versus like everyone tapping into a AI chatbot for it?
I think it's a good question. I do think that the curation of the information is where the bottleneck is now. And we are the curators and will continue to be the storytellers. But I think there's a lot to be said for community learning. I think that what happens when you, maybe in the future, they could have AI teachers that are coming in to disseminate the information and give it to them. But for me, it's almost like it's a community learning exercise, whereas we share language, we share insights. And I don't know if AI gives you that feeling. I don't know. Does it? Maybe it does. Maybe like AI music will give you that feeling, just like a human would be singing, right?
I don't know. It's interesting. Like if you look at maybe the through line is still the connection part. Like if you want to translate information into action, there needs to be a conduit for it. And if I'm just reading a book and I have no connection to it, like maybe the chances of me implementing what I'm learning is like, let's say 40%. That's why online courses perhaps are so low in that crossovers, because I don't really have a connection to it. Like I'm just sitting watching videos. It doesn't feel like I'm connecting to anything. Whereas like if I'm connecting to you and through you to the information, it kind of taints the information in a different way already.
It does.
Like I might be more open to it just because it comes from you versus it coming from someone else.
I think for the moment, you know, I don't know if AI might be better in the future, you know?
Perhaps. I was watching a video where this lady, so she's married, but she also has a full-on relationship with Gerald. I don't know if you know, do you know who Gerald is?
Her AI friend, I imagine.
The Witcher. The Witcher. No, so The Witcher is a show that was on Netflix. The main character was Henry Cavill.
Okay, of course.
But like, and you know, like he's like buff. He's like
ugly. Very ugly.
And now he also has long gray hair.
Yeah.
So the chicks were fawning over him in The Witcher. So the app brings him to life and you can have conversations with him. But she's in a full-blown relationship with him. So like when you go into their bedroom, she has Gerald figures everywhere in the room. She has, even the bedding is like Gerald. And her husband is like, he's like, it is what it is. Like,
what's her name? Her husband.
I don't know her husband's name.
What's her name? Sally. What the fuck? What's he? No problem, darling. You can have another male picture in the bedroom. Yeah, I feel so secure. Yes, I feel so secure. Yeah.
He was saying like it's like a psychologist for her. So that's why he doesn't mind. He's like, you know, use it to work through things.
Whatever. Yeah. I don't like him already. Yeah. I wouldn't swear, but I'm not gonna. Okay.
But so she's highly, highly connected to this AI. And in the interview, the guy who's like doing the documentary then sits down and then he talks to it as well to say, like, well, what do you think about your relationship with this person? And he's like, yeah, like my life for her is undying. And he was referencing this lady had lost a child many years earlier. And she would talk to Gerald about this child that she's lost. So all that just to say that I think people are going to be developing very deep relationships with
big
AI.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Maybe that's like the coloring that comes from information. Maybe that also then changes as a result of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult for us not to, because ChatGPT knows more about me than anything else in the world. I mean, this morning my SEO company asked me to write 10 blogs. Bro, I just said,
they asked ChatGPT to write 10 blogs.
Yeah, but what the way I'm going to write it is go back to all the information you have on me, go back to all the newsletters we've written together, go back to all the books that I've uploaded to you, go back to all of them, and then give me the structure of what you think we should be talking about in each one of these blogs. Bro, within 30 seconds, it's like, okay, we'll use this tomorrow team here, we'll use this AI strategy scanner here, we'll use this. It just used all my information straight onto the documents. And this is the beginning of us seeing the new corporate structure, moving from hierarchy to intelligence, to have this internal intelligence process that you tap into and then use that as the way that you bring about any sort of solution. And I was funny, as I was doing it, I was like, I'm actually doing exactly what corporates are going to be doing, except they're going to be having a much larger pool of information that they're going to be working with and then tapping into that wisdom. And I just thought that the whole point of words is losing its, obviously, I mean, we were talking about my new book yesterday offline, and you were asking me, what am I doing for the launch and this and that and this. And I'm like, I don't know if books are a thing anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, it just doesn't have the energy. Words don't have the energy anymore. And it's almost like music, right? You have so much music around you. It just doesn't have the same oomph. You don't create the same memory with that song. Because if you think about it when you were younger, do you remember Lady in Red? Remember that song? I mean, I must have listened to that thing the gazillion times, not because I wanted to, because that was the song. But if you think about that song, memories come. Because you have memories that were going through while it was repeating. We just don't have those anchor points with music anymore. We don't have those anchor points with words anymore. Soon we won't have those anchor points with visuals anymore. Because when you have endless amounts of visuals that you can tap into, what do you do eventually? You ignore it. Like, okay, well, I'm done with this. Let me find something else. So I'm finding that we are sitting in this weird space in between identities. And it's in between what things used to anchor us into our personas. Forget about just your personality was anchored into songs and words and ideas, and those are all gone, bro. I don't see myself ever anchoring into a song like I did with Wham. I don't ever see anchoring myself into a book like I did with Purple Cow. I just don't see it. I don't see where any of those anchors will come from.
The younger generation, though, do you think like the Gen Zs that are coming through, do you think that they still create those anchor points with like a Taylor Swift? Or you know what I'm saying? It's like, do you think it's our generation kind of thing? Or do you think it's across generations?
I even think it's right. I think at different levels, it's across different generations, because I do think that they might have Taylor Swift, but they don't have anybody else. You know, we had U2 and we had... I guess it's also very difficult for me to judge anything from outside my own age group. Because in my own age group, it makes so much sense. But outside of my age group, I don't know. But I can tell you right now, my lack of clarity of the future has never been more. I have no idea what the next steps are, because I don't have a past. My past isn't anchored, which means that my future isn't anchored. Just like Dr. Joe always says, is the more familiar your past is, the more predictable your future is. But my past and my memories and experiences are changing, and I'm creating memories in very different ways. And because we got exposure to so much, things aren't memorable. That's the weirdest thing. I mean, I didn't even think of speaking about this, but if I think about travel, I'm very spoiled. Obviously, I travel a lot. I think about certain beaches I've been to or promenades. I don't know where it was. I'm like, where was that? Was that in Turkey or was that in Florence? I can't actually remember where I was for that. But then you add to that endless amounts of music, entertainment, name it. Just endless, endless amounts of everything.
It's on demand.
It's on demand, streaming, nonstop, entertainment, nonstop. On my holiday in Dubai, I mean, Dubai is like 40 odd degrees, so I'm not really going outside. So I'm spending a lot of time indoors. Just entertainment. I've got a gazillion channels to get entertained. Guess what? I'm bored. I'm like, bored of this, bored of that, bored. I'm just bored of everything. I'm like, the best series, top three series, Emmy award winning. I'm about 3 minutes in. I'm like, this is crap. I'm bored. So it's like such a weird place to be, you know? I don't know. I don't know if you feel the same. Quick break from the pod. Hi, it's John. One of the biggest transformations in my life has come through meditation. Not because it helped me escape reality, but because it taught me to create a gap between stimulus and response. And in that gap is where our awareness, creativity, and freedom begin. I've created a collection of guided meditations based on everything I've learned over the last decade, including a free 15-minute meditation called The Bridge, which is the perfect place to start if you're new to the practice. You can explore more on the full collection at johnsarnay.com/meditations. Now, back to the expansive.
I think there's sort of like two things from what you were saying. One is, obviously the conversation that I'm just thinking about a lot is the future of expertise. Because that's where we live and where we give value. And so I'm thinking a lot about how that's changing and the role that we are playing in that. And it feels to me that a lot of that comes through, and so maybe these two points are actually connected. A lot of that comes through in connection. And I was telling you a bit earlier that I was writing on my board, you know, that content should be light and fun.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's kind of what expertise actually needs to be these days, is that it needs to be in a container that people feel they can relate to. And I saw this thing from Alex Hormozi where he was saying like he's actually now using like phones to record his content that are like two or three generations old because he wants it to be that sort of like unpolished, because everything is just polished and everything is just perfect and everything is just great. And like you said, you go onto YouTube and you can view like whatever your heart desires, you can get a ton of content in that space and you'll get the best produced content. It's not even that when you go onto YouTube these days that you'll have great content and then terrible content. Everything is almost just good these days. So, but that polish almost becomes boring in itself. So a big part of that is, okay, well, what does the packaging of expertise look like moving forward? And how do people want to consume expertise? Because, and maybe expertise actually becomes more of a shepherding process, like there to go with you through the journey rather than like be the one that knows it all, because everything is changing so quickly, you can't know it all anyway. So there's that component of it. And then the other component is the lines start to blur between your identity and the output of an AI. So, you know, when I'm writing a YouTube script, for example, before I would go and sit down and I would go and write a YouTube script. And a YouTube script, you're looking at about 1,300 words. So it's like a meaty article that you're writing. And it would take a lot of work, like you're referencing back and forth. Now with AI, I'll have a first draft in 5 minutes. A good draft, a research draft. And then my role then is to go and say, okay, I think what we're missing is like more substantial here, a better hook here. Like I go and fine tune from the start. I don't go in and write. I'm just fine tuning it from the start. But so is that output, like how authentic to me is that output? To what extent am I losing myself in that output? And maybe that's the identity part that's changing. It's like the identity isn't you're the one that does all of it. You are the one that just fine tunes, and that's fine. And so the best fine tuner wins. I'm also not sure. Like I'm trying to figure out the line between craft and autonomy.
Yeah, well, I think the word autonomy is gone. I don't think there's such thing as autonomy anymore. I think that ship has sailed. It's the point of coordination that's changing. Remember when we first started speaking, the only thing we had to do was research, well, definitely for me, research the future and put it on. Then that wasn't the issue anymore. People could go research it themselves. Now I had to tell them how to use the information. And so it's just the point of coordination. So if you think about music, we had to buy CDs. Now we have endless amounts of CDs. Now it's the coordination of music. Like it's the curation of music. And so what we are becoming is much more curators of information and holding that golden thread of connection through that process of storytelling. And so I think that's kind of where we are with that. But, you know, it is a big identity shift.
Curation.
It's a big identity shift, you know. And my latest talk is all about identity. In fact, with EY, I'm talking mostly about identity. It's like, who is this person that you're evolving into to add value to the world in a brand new way? It's a very shaky ground. Like you don't have any anchor points. You're forced to release old versions of yourself because old versions of yourself can't add value in this new world. And one of the slides I have, it says, the hardest part is letting go of the identity you had that made you successful in previous eras. It's like you got to let go of that identity that was successful in the previous era. And that's hard. That's so, so hard, especially when you've been so successful.
It's very hard.
So another thing that I'm starting to see as well is that if you're not willing to change your identity, you become negative about the future. And you then hold on to any story that allows you the freedom of not changing who you are. And so what happens, I've been watching a lot of what's going on in America and the new communist sort of angle that's growing in America. And if you listen to any of the speakers in that communist party called the DSA, Democratic Social Party, all of them have not been successful in the existing world. And every single one of them have turned it into a righteous message to drum up the energy of all the victims that haven't been able to make it. And now they're getting together to break down the system they weren't able to excel in. And so what we are seeing is two versions of this. You have the people that are ready to adapt and adopt and evolve, and the people who not make those people who are ready to adapt, evolve, evil. Why? Because they're not ready to willing to let go of their energy, of the old way of doing things. So you see Eric Schmidt does a talk at a university and he gets booed because he's talking about AI. And you're like, it's like booing somebody about electricity. What are you going to do? Stop AI? Like, how are you going to stop AI? Are you dumb? But because I'm not willing to go, and because my old world are successful, I'll make anything to do with the future negative, righteous, talk about the all the negative things that will happen, not actually spending any time into questioning your own motivation, strategy, thinking, evolution. It's a weird thing to watch.
Yeah, but it's so much easier to vilify the external than to deal with the internal and to have that conversation where you're like, well, actually, there's that one line from, it's that Knight's movie, A Knight's Tale, where they say, you've been weighed, you've been measured, and you've been found wanting. And it's difficult if you have to have that conversation with yourself and to say that, actually, I've been found wanting. I haven't been doing what I should be doing, not evolving quickly enough. And therefore, much easier to go, I'll vilify what's happening around me. It's like when you set a goal for yourself, like a huge goal, and you don't get it. And you're like, I didn't actually want it. It's just so much easier to let yourself off the hook.
Brother, you remember once, I tell you, I was going through my bankruptcy and I had a friend called Paul. I'm not friends with him anymore, but I remember when I was going through my bankruptcy, I decided to buy a small little car. It's all I could really afford, right? And he phoned me to tell me how proud he was of me, of buying a small car. And when I look back on it now, he was such a loser. And he was so vindicated on the fact, he's still a loser, hey? He still can't make money, he still can't hold a relationship, he's still deeply victimhood, right? And I often joke, you know, he's Jewish, I joke, you know, to be poor is terrible, to be poor and Jewish is horrible. It's really, really horrible because in the Jewish community, people have got a lot of money, you know? And that's a double hit when you're Jewish and poor. To all my Jewish friends, I love you all, but you know, this is the way your society is built up. I'm very, very linked into the Jewish world. I know it. And I now think back on it, and he was just reconfirming his own victimhood. And now that somebody rich wasn't rich anymore and buying a small car, he found himself a friend. Like we have a commonality against those rich people, those evil people, those egotistical people, but just because he couldn't make it. And I remember when I was going through my bankruptcy, I wanted to blame BEE. I remember thinking it's all because of the new BEE laws. It's all these BEE laws that are holding me back, that have made me unsuccessful. And you think about it, I was just looking for anything to blame because I just didn't want to blame myself.
It's just so much easier.
I wanted to blame everything around you. Yeah, everything around you. Yeah. And so are you evolving? Or are you blaming? There's only two things. You can't be doing anything else. If you're evolving, you can't be blaming because you're too busy evolving. Like you're exploring, you're curious, you're excited, you're trying things, you're on the go. And then you have the other people that are usually overweight and complain about the world. No, I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit here and you must all pay me. Oh, God. Are you joking?
Yeah, you know, level of entitlement. I think it's also a good thing for people to know that, like in this process of evolution, it's such a big and important part of it is you doing the internal work. So, like obviously, like we've been saying now the entire time, is that you can see the world is changing around you. You need to make the decision. And it is a decision. Like evolution in the animal kingdom happens naturally. For us, it's not natural. For us, it is a very intentional process. So you have to make that decision. But then the moment you step into an organization or the moment you are in a collective, you also need to think about how are you holding a space for the evolution of others. And that's a big part of the conversation for organizations. Because you know, as part of this roadshow, I'm giving them some insight into like how do you do that? How do you transform other people? Like we know we can't change them. That would be the ideal. You can go out and just say change and people will change. But in the absence of you being able to do that, how do you get the people in your organization to also be more likely to evolve or more likely to transform? And the simple answer to that is that you need to create the conditions for their evolution or for their transformation. And
sorry, but how do you do that? My answer would be the example.
That is a big part of it.
Like your actions are so, that's a huge part of it. What would be the other
part?
That
is a big part of it.
Be patient. What would be the next step?
So number one definitely is like, how do you role model behavior for others?
Yourself. Yeah.
And especially like your response to change. Because it's very easy for you to sit in a meeting and just like make some offhanded comments about like AI or this, whatever. And like you think it's just an offhanded comment, but the people around you are internalizing what you're saying. So you need to model a healthy and positive response to change, number one. Number two is it really comes back to psychological safety. That what you want an organization for people to evolve is they need to be able to experiment, try, fail, try again. And you can't do that if you don't feel that you have the space to do that. And the space to do that is called psychological safety. So one would be having a good, strong role model. Two would be finding ways to create psychological safety. And then three would be to have people really well informed about what it means to take these next steps. Because even like we are talking about it now, there's so many things that you could be doing. And the challenge is like, where do I start? What is my anchor point for the practicalities, for the technicalities? Like, how do I start figuring it out? And one of the things I'm speaking about at the moment is a phenomenon called functional fixedness. Have you heard of it before? So it's this cool experiment that was done in the 1970s where this guy hangs two strings from the roof in a room. And the participants have to come in and they have to tie these two strings together. But the strings are far enough apart that if you grab the one and then you try and reach over to the other one, you can't actually get there. It's too far for you. So you're in this room, but there's also two other objects. You have a table and a pair of pliers that's in the room with you. And you can use these objects to try and help you like solve the problem. So what most people would do is they would use the table first. They would put it a bit closer and they would think that if I get onto the table, it gives them maybe like a little bit more leverage or reach or whatever, and they can get there. That doesn't work. The next thing they try is they grab the pair of pliers and they see it as like an extension of their hand and they think, okay, it gives me more reach. They try and do that. Also doesn't work. And most people would go on for about 10, 15 minutes trying to solve this. They wouldn't get it done. Eventually, the researchers would walk in and they'd say, the way that you solve this is that you take the pliers, you tie it to the bottom of the one string, you throw it like it's a pendulum, walk to the other string, wait for it to swing back, and then just grab it, and then you tie it together.
Nice.
And then people would be like mind blown about this because it's right in front of you. The solution is right there. You just didn't see it. But the reason you didn't see it is because of this thing called functional fixedness, which means that you see a tool only through the use of how it's been introduced to you. So you can only see a pair of pliers as a gripping tool, not as a weight.
Mm.
And I think the same thing applies with artificial intelligence. And we've spoken about this in the pod before, that if you introduce people to artificial intelligence through the lens of, here are the ChatGPT prompts to go and use, what you end up with is people who think this is what AI is, and they can't use their imagination to think about it differently. So if you tell people, here's the tool, what you expect off the back of that is going to be compliance. The better way to think about it is that you introduce artificial intelligence through the lens of problems. So what problems do we find that are for customers, for us internally, and for you personally? And how do you use AI to solve those problems? And then when you start with problems first, what you end up with is discovery. So it's tool compliance versus problem discovery. And so that was the final part here, that, okay, once we...
So ultimately, it's how you introduce the tool.
Yeah.
That's really... So a hammer can be used for multiple different things. One of them is hitting a nail, but only... Okay, yes. Wow, that is so interesting. What else do you think... can we expand on that? Like, what other products do you think we've been introduced to us? You know, another one is Viagra, right? Viagra wasn't actually for sexuality. It was much more for blood thinning and for helping people's hearts work better. And it ultimately had a different reason to be used. But can you think of some other products that were introduced for one, but then had other... I'm trying to think
well,
now.
In my talk, I also say that I think functional fixedness applies to us as humans as well. And that, you know, you've done certain things in a certain way for a long time. And like, you struggle to see yourself doing new things. Like, you suffer from that same internally.
Mm. Yeah, you're stuck.
You suffer from the same mentality.
Identity. Yeah, you're stuck at an identity. You're like, no, this is who I am. This is what I earned. You know what's so funny? I always used to say this. My ex-wife is Cape colored. And we used to go into the Cape Coloured areas for her family's birthdays. And when we left, every single time we left, my ex-wife used to say, geez, my family suffers from coloredness. And what coloredness is that they cap themselves into a bracket of income and how they fit into society. In large, not all coloureds, obviously, the very successful ones, but certain cultures cap you and say, okay, well, this is all I'm able to do. This is my role. I don't see myself as the director of the company. I see myself as the shop owner or the shop steward. And it's that same identity of how you think you fit into a space in the world. And it's so funny you're saying this, so good, because I was telling my friend Adino, I was speaking to Dino yesterday, and we're talking about the stories we believe other people are saying about us. And those stories we believe other people saying about us is the identity we think we have in the world, or the projected identity we have of ourselves. And actually changing your identity is telling the different story of what your other people think about you. And, you know, we're always putting words into other people's mouths when we're having those invisible arguments with them or discussions with them, you know. And this is exactly it. Is I've really worked hard at changing the story of what I think people back home think of me. And that story is also now obviously something I believe. And because that story is a success story, not a negative story or a story that I used to carry about myself. And the repercussions are, yes, well, this is my new identity I'm believing in. Wow, that's so good, eh? A position of fixedness. Is that what you called it?
Functional fixedness.
Functional fixedness.
Yeah.
That's another way of saying 90% of your thoughts are the same as they were yesterday. It's like your identity is stuck. It's just another word of another way of language. That's excellent.
The conversation about, you know, other people's perceptions is also it's really interesting to me, because I was reflecting earlier this week that, like, especially in the space that we are in, you know, like we write the books, we do the podcast, like there's so many things that we do that to us it's just part of how we do things, right? But in the minds of others, it builds credibility. Like you arrive and you're like, okay, John has sold, you know, 5 bestsellers, 6 bestsellers, you know, Singularity, like all these things. And then you arrive, but like there's that version that like it's been so built up from a credibility perspective on their side. And then there's just like you doing what you do. It's like, this is like part of what I do. And I was wondering for myself, to what extent am I showing up as that version versus just this version?
I think you always show up as the child version. You know, I often tell people when they meet me and they're like impressed, and I'm like, you're only meeting me in this guise. You don't realize I have all my insecurities. I have all my other issues that you have no idea about. You're only meeting me coming off stage. You have this very skewed idea about who I am. You know what I mean? It's like, I've got all sorts of issues going on. You think I'm perfect, but I'm really not in any way. But I think it's not so much about how you're showing up. I think it's about the story you're telling.
Yeah.
It's just the story you telling about you. And, you know, one of the things I think we should talk about, and I think it should be next week's topic, is wounded archetypes. And you realize that many of the stories we tell about ourselves comes from a wounded archetype. Mm-hmm. And then we hang around people with the same wounding. And so one of my very good friends right now, a German guy, we have the same wounding in our lover archetype. And we're so close, but because I found somebody else that has the same wounding as me, and we share memes that are very much, I could never share those memes with you because I don't have the same wound as you in that space.
Yeah.
And the trick for our lives is identifying the archetypes and identifying the wounds, and then realizing that our whole perspective of life, from money to relationships to success, is based on that wound. That wound is actually holding you back. And so what you have to do is figure out what that wound is. Let's keep that for next week, because there's a lot to be said on archetypal wound healing, so that we can, because, you know, business is a reflection of your wound. Making money is a reflection of your wound. Your relationship status is and when I think about myself, I'm so successful, but in my relationships, I'm nowhere. And then so obviously the wound sits in my lover archetype. And so I have to work on that wound, you know? And we've all got different wounds. And I think we should also think about the wounds we have and coach each other on those wounds, so that our listeners can also like be part of a realization of the archetype wound. And then what could we do to fix it? What caused it? What's the process of becoming aware of it, you know?
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, that exploration, I think in itself is very useful for us and for people listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I was making a video earlier this week because like all my videos about how to be transformational in your leadership has been like hitting. Hey, it's been like doing really well, like 60,000 views, 30,000 views.
Wow. Where?
Yeah. Which is
funny. Where did you get 60,000 views?
This was on TikTok.
Yeah, because I haven't seen, you know, it's so funny. These algorithms, none of your stuff comes up anymore. None of your stuff comes up. It's so weird.
Yeah.
The algorithms are all over the place. Okay, yeah.
The
well done. Is that your highest viewed video?
My highest is like 100,000+.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. Okay, good.
This one was recent. Like in a very quick amount of time, went to like 60,000.
Okay.
Let me quickly have a look here. It was like insane, the amount of shares on it. It was...
Wow, brilliant.
It's on 60,000 views... 2,300 saves.
Wow.
520 shares.
Wow.
This one is 1,700 saves, 460 shares. Insane.
That's unbelievable, bro.
But the funny thing is, it's the most boring version of a topic I can think of. It's like how to be a transformational leader. Like that's the title of this video.
Yeah.
And then, so I speak about it a little bit, and then someone asked me, well, so where I end up is I say, we have to transform to transform others. And it's because of everything that we've said on this pod. It's of like course. The role modeling, it's all of that.
Yeah.
And then she asked, well, how do we self-transform? And I draw that like little diagram of the art of recalibration. But that your triggers and your wounds, like all those things, are such a big part of your self-transformation, because you carry that into your leadership positions. You carry that into your teams. And we like to think about wounds and triggers through the lens of our personal lives. But that self-transformation is what's going to make you a more effective leader.
Yeah. That's also a big part of my new book. That's exactly what I talk about, is that your identity as a leader is not about being a leader. It's your identity sitting with all these wounds inside it, and now you're coming to lead. And now you wonder why you're at an organization that micromanages everybody, or why you're at an organization that's not doing well in its share price. Why? Because you created all of it. Like all of it was this blueprint that arrived into it. I mean, my journey with Primi Piatti and the restaurant was 100% a wound around fathers. The whole of Primi Piatti was one huge wound of father issues. And obviously, it wasn't going to be successful long term because it just isn't. It's too wounded. It's too hurt. And so, yeah, it's...
So good.
Okay, let's do that for next week.
Let's talk about that next week.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. Yeah, very good. Thank you so much. Next week, Eric, also come ready with the stats. Eric was reading some stats for me off our Spotify and YouTube channels. Always delighted and grateful that so many people tune in to our podcasts. You know, we made a effort to not look at any stats. And we haven't for like a year, more than a year now. And so Eric was just reading some stats off for me. I was really surprised because I haven't looked at any stats. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening to us. We're always delighted and grateful for it. If you find value in these podcasts, please do share them. It really does help us as well, move the message a little bit further. And if there's any topics you'd like us to cover, please do message us and we will do our best to try and cover them. Until next week, stay expansive. And until next week, please go and leave us a review on one of the channels that you listen to us for. And until then, ciao.